To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. You find my stuff online at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. That is MikeLuoma.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter after there.com/MikeLuoma, MikeLuoma. And there's a Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. I have a mailing list too. Going to be sending one of those out coming up this week because there's a new book coming out. I'm going to talk about that in our book news in just a minute or two here. But yeah, to get on the mailing list, just go to any of those sites. glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com or facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. They all have sign-up boxes, I guess. Little, you know, subscribe things right there. When you join, too, you get a free copy of the Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life, which isn't really a guide to life. It's an anthology. It's a collection of my stuff, some of which you can't find anywhere else, which I thought would be cool. You know, if you were a fan enough to join the mailing list, you might like this PDF. The Adventures of Alibi Jones continue on the podcast. Now, Alibi is disguised as a Dakur. They're a cat-like alien race. And the reason for that is he's on this planet called Kismet, where they have warned him if he shows his face, he's a dead man. So he's not showing his face. The guy who owns that planet, or runs it, well, he owns it too. His name is Rene Lavalure, and he's basically a crime lord. Not a nice person. And we're going to actually hear from him in this chapter that we're getting into today. Chapter 20 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, coming up. We're visiting with the villains. Actually, there's a scene with each of our major villains in this chapter. Our two major villains from the book. Now, Lavalure has been hovering on the edges of the story since the novel began. It's time to bring him in. Our other bad guy is kind of a surprise, sort of, I think. So I'll let you discover in this chapter just who has been pulling strings behind the scenes. It's a visit with our villains this week on Glow in the Dark Radio. But first, a little book news, and as I said, there's a new book coming out this week. It's brand new. It's Good Samaritan Unto Dust number 2 coming out this Wednesday, February 14th, Ash Wednesday. Which works because of the subject matter of the book. It's a perfect day for it. And the book is a long time in coming. The story of a priest in Boston in 1965 with superpowers. It's kind of a superhero noir. He thinks the power comes from the Holy Spirit, but he's turning people into dust, so I'm not sure about that. It features amazing art, amazing pencil art by Federico Guillen, that's directly colored by Ken Letier. Sublime color work, too. I'm the writer and letterer, and we are releasing both number 2 of 2 and a combined graphic novel this coming Wednesday. Number 1 has been out for a long time, so I figure there will be people who have number 1 and just want to get number 2. But a lot of people might want to pick up the completed 2-in-1 at the same time, you know? So that's what I'm doing. Releasing number 2 of 2 and a combined graphic novel, 2-in-1. And you'll be able to get it at Comixology, Drive-Thru Comics, and Indie Planet. Indie Planet's going to have the print-on-demand print copies, too. There will be links and details, of course, at glowinthedarkradio.com. That's Good Samaritan Unto Dust number 2 coming out this Wednesday, February 14th, Ash Wednesday, from Glow in the Dark Radio Comics. And that's my big news. Very proud of this book. It's so beautiful. Federico did such a great job on the art. Ken did such an amazing job on color. I'm hoping my lettering does their work justice. I think it does. I tried to bring my A game and raise my skills to the level that they've brought to the project. So I hope that people like it. It's a different sort of book, so you never know. Makes you a little nervous when you have something new coming out into the world. That is all for news. I digress. We've got chapter 20 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on the way next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Wake up. Go to work. Work. Come home. Eat dinner. Rot your brain out. Go to bed. Lather. Rinse. Repeat. Are you tired of an old humdrum life? Tired of things that just weigh you down and depress you? Wouldn't you rather just focus on things that are awesome? Tune into Nutty Bites. Find out what's awesome. Nutty Bites. NIMLAS.org/blog.
Now here's chapter 20 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Peterson! Lavalore bellows, calling out for his right-hand man, his chubby face red with anger and effort. Lavalore leans forward to open a comm channel he had temporarily muted.
I am sorry, friend. I've just received a report that troubles me and requires my immediate attention. I don't want to waste your time, as I know it is precious to a scientist like yourself. We can speak of the, artifact again some other... What? You will? I'm flattered. Well, yes, it is hard to get a secure beam like this. Thank you for waiting. This won't take long.
Lavalore sucks in a lungful of air to let out another yell.
Peterson!
Peterson strides into the lavish office atop Circle Bay Casino and walks up to Lavalore's desk. A cool, detached part of his brain always appreciates the view of Circle Bay from Lavalore's office. Lavalore sits with his back to the bay. He seems to prefer the other wall's monitor screens. Peterson suppresses a thought about the sublime and the ridiculous, and addresses his bellowing boss.
Renee, you called me? What the fuck is going on with the fucking decor?
Lavalore fires the question at the man.
Why do we have cat people running around the fucking detention area? I just got a report. The place is crawling with them. Interrupted an important comm conversation I'm having.
You gave them visiting rights, Renee.
Then take them away!
Lavalore yells.
Fuck this decor shit!
Rakar will not be pleased, Peterson points out. You may make it harder to get them to agree later to the trade exchanges you desire.
Shit! Lavalore spits. You're right.
Why do you have to be right all the time, eh, Peterson? It gets annoying sometimes.
Well, Renee, you know, I don't mean to annoy you. Fine, fine. Tell Rakar he can visit, but no one else, or him and his immediate family.
Those are the restrictions now, Renee. The Dakor claim to have large families.
God damn it!
Lavalore swears as he thinks.
Then tell him he can go visit in there with one. Now, two other cat people at a time. No more. I don't want them trying to fucking pull something.
I will tell him, Peterson says, trying not to sigh and piss off his boss.
Good. Go take care of that. Tell them to go empty their litter boxes or some fucking thing. I don't care,
Lavalore says. Consider it done, Renee, Peterson assures the fat man. He gives Lavalore a nod, and then turns and walks from the room. Lavalore leans forward and again reopens the comm.
Thank you for your patience, my friend,
Lavalore purrs, oozing obsequience.
The matter at hand is now well in hand. So, let us get back to our matters. I must admit, I am surprised to hear from you again. Well, I did hear through the grapevine that you and Mr. Finder found the item we had both been pursuing.
Ah, so it is true.
You wouldn't happen to want to sell the...
No? Lavalore grimaces, but maintains his happy tone.
No, I didn't think you would, but I had to ask. So then, why do you call?
Oh, really? The slaver belt? We weren't actually sure it even truly exist.
You do?
And you are willing to work out some sort of exchange for it?
Excellent. What do you think it is worth?
Oh. The amount named causes Lavalure to pause, but only for a moment. The slaver belt is a worthy prize. Another remnant of the powerful past. Another toy left by the ancient enemy. If it performs as advertised, it gives its wielder nothing less than complete control over other beings. Lavalure gets a thrill, a chill, and a hard-on as he thinks about being able to possess another person entirely. He could literally fuck himself.
That sum can be arranged, Lavalure says. Although, I am surprised you do not keep the belt for yourself. I guess that the first item fulfills...
Yes, no need for it, then. Well, I do collect these things, as you know. But why me?
We do? A common enemy, you say, Mr. Hazomet. Oh, yes, I do know of this Alibi Jones.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, Hazomet says to Lavalure over the comm. If this artifact helps you to destroy him, even better. I have the artifact I need, Mr. Lavalure. When can we meet to consummate this transaction?
Hazomet listens, as the fat, pale echo wheezes his weak response.
Yes, I understand. It will take some time to gather the resources, Hazomet answers.
A month?
Fine. We can pick the time and place when you are ready to meet. Good day, Mr. Lavalure. Come off.
Hazomet leans back from the comm unit. An evil grin curls up the corners of his mouth and stretches across his face.
Stupid fool, Hazomet says to a servant standing beside him, awaiting any orders his master might have.
Hazomet laughs.
He'll be wearing the slaver belt after our meeting. These humans are so simple-minded. Such weak specimens. Pale echoes of us, truly.
The servant cocks his head to the side, but cannot speak.
I did not lie to the man. I have no use for the slaver belt. Not currently, anyway. The travel chair, however, that is another story.
Hazomet steeples his fingers in front of his chest as he continues his ruminations.
The chair is made of useful pieces, technology I need to bring the people back to life. The bodies I've made are not perfect, but nearly so. Close enough to risk the return.
Hazomet rises from the chair before the comm unit, causing the servant to dodge.
I'll use the travel chair to bring them back, then use the slaver belt to take over Kismet, to give us a base. I, for one, am tired of floating in the void, Hazomet says with a flourish.
The servant grunts, confused.
Maybe I should make some of you that can talk, Hazomet says to the small blue creature. Though I don't want to make you too smart. Those old servants, those Eldritch, got out of control. Ah, well, we made them that way. Might as well be talking to myself.
Hazomet leaves the living space of his vessel and makes his way down the length of his ship to the main lab on board.
This body has been suitable, Hazomet says to himself.
He is pleased, feeling the body's muscles flex as he saunters down the ship's corridor. The bodies he is creating have gotten better, and he is still Hazomet. Born for the first time long ago, reborn more recently, and born again a few times more since, Hazomet is certain each new body he is reborn into, each new form, is a little closer to perfection, to a form like the body he once had of old. Growth tanks line the walls of the lab, 20 on each long side, and 8 on the narrower ends. Each tank is filled with a translucent blue gel. In the gel in each tank grows a human-looking body, some small fetuses, others fully grown men and women. The bodies twitch and vibrate ever so slightly in the gel as bioelectric shocks stimulate tissue growth and muscle toning. The floor of the lab is filled by four operating theater clusters, four tables surrounded by Azumet's newly fashioned, but ancient in theory, medical high technology and instruments of torture. One of the tables is empty. Human corpses, the tops of their skulls removed, are prone upon two of the other tables. Azumet strides over to the fourth table, where his most recent human specimen is stretched out. The man is still alive, but the top of his skull has been removed. An intricate network of fiber-thin wires leads in a bundle from Azumet's machines on the side to the interior of the man's brain, where the leads spread out like a plate of angel hair pasta perched on top of his open skull. Azumet knows there is a language, a message, hidden in humankind's DNA. The ancient enemy used DNA to carry their species on into the future, when their race was being wiped out. Azumet and the other elite scientists of his race programmed starseeds to carry their DNA into the stars when their homeworld was destroyed. Then they sent their bioenergetic matrices ahead into the future. The ancient enemy had discovered the secret of time travel employing tachyons. But they could not move physical material through time, only their energies. In effect, a vast number of the greatest minds of the final generation of the race, others called the ancient enemy, gambled and abandoned their physical bodies to catapult their very minds and souls ahead through time. The human race are the indirect offspring of the ancient enemy. One of their DNA-laced starseeds landed on Earth, and ancient enemy DNA helped to create the human race. Though some races sought to destroy humankind, and others sought to exploit the human race, ultimately humanity grew, evolved, and developed into its own entity, its own separate life form. As had been planned by the scientific elite of the ancient enemy over a million years ago, Azumet was the first to emerge from the trans-time travel, possessing the body of a minor criminal in the present day. He began experimenting on human subjects, attempting to extract the original DNA coding of the ancient enemy's race from, as Azumet saw it, the now degraded and devolved human stock. Using this purified DNA, Azumet began creating clones, attempting to reconstruct the original bodies of the ancient enemy, to make new bodies in which the time-traveling scientific elite of the ancient enemy can land. He had gotten rather far along in his original experiments when the meddling human Alibi Jones interfered with and messed up his plans. The only positive side, as Azumet saw it, was that he was able to extract Jones's DNA, and the young man's DNA was slightly more evolved than the average human being's, slightly purer and closer to the ideal sought by Azumet. This has enabled Azumet to create improved potential host bodies for those of the ancient enemy elite still traveling through time. The challenge of late has been creating a receiver, a focusing device, for the transtemporal energy matrices of those traveling time using the ancient enemy's tachyon-driven technology. Getting the human finder to find the travel chair of Inokata was an enormous help. The fact that he got Alibi Jones to retrieve it was beautiful irony. Alibi Jones, helping to bring the downfall and enslavement of his race, if all goes according to plan. Azumet chuckles to himself as he thinks of the future redomination of the universe by the people. It will go according to plan. I will not fail. Not this time. Not now that he has the travel chair. The materials, the constructs available to him, those things made in this time, do not possess the strength, the built-in energies that items made by the ancient enemy once did. The energy conduits of this day are paltry. None would be capable of carrying the sort of power, the kind of energies Azumet once worked with, once had at his disposal as an elite scientist of the people. Even if the conduits were made of stronger stuff, the energy generation technology of these primitives is incapable of creating the power Azumet is used to working with. That all changes with the acquisition of the travel chair of Inokata. Azumet leaves the main lab, heading into the smaller side cabin where the travel chair sits. It is only a framework now. Its plush cushions and wooden inlays rotted away long ago. But Azamet can still see those things in his mind's eye. Even back in his day, Inokata was long dead. But while Azamet led the scientific elite, the madman Quintelae and his faithful disciple Dolome had used the chair's power to escape from the planet of exile. The chair became a popular object of discussion, but remained out of reach on the planet of exile, guarded by the security construct known as the Laughing Array. Dolome was caught and sentenced to suspension. Quintelae escaped. Last Azamet knew in his old life, Quintelae was on the run, but still sending expeditions back to the planet of exile to try to retrieve the chair.
"It was a gamble, sending Alibi Jones in after you," Azamet says to the chair as he strokes the side of its metal frame. "I knew the Laughing Array was somehow still working even after all these years, and even though it was no longer in orbit. But the mental defenses Jones threw up at me when I tried to penetrate his mind. Impressive. Stronger psionic potential than I have sensed in any other of these humans so far. Seemed a gamble worth taking. That brute Lavalur had already sentenced many of his people to madness and death, trying to get at you. How many expeditions did he send down there? A modern-day Quintelae the Mad."
Azamet feels his left wrist begin to twitch. It is an early warning sign. This current body is breaking down. Near time to once again transfer to a new body. He has been looking forward to the new skin. This new generation of bodies shows true promise for long-term habitation. As he stares at the travel chair of Inokata, this tangible thing in front of him, this evidence of the power and the technology of his once great people, Azamet makes his decision. It is time to trigger the Tachyon Beacon. It is time to call the temporal wanderers out of the chaos of the time stream to this time. He will go into a new body, but he will do so with the first wave of those elite of the people who return from traveling through time. He smiles at what that will mean to so many. He will cannibalize the chair to build the Tachyon focusing array. The scale he needs to work on requires it. Azamet is running through plans, seeing schematics in his mind as he begins to strip the travel chair down for the needed parts. The ancient enemy will soon live again.
That was Chapter 20 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio. Azamet. We kind of knew he was lurking in the background. Kind of figured that was him talking to Finder, but we didn't know for sure until just now. Worst of all, Alibi has helped him. Azamet's manipulations mean Alibi, in effect, worked for Azamet. And now Azamet is going to use the travel chair of Inokata to try to bring the elite of the ancient enemy into contemporary time. If he's successful, the known universe would have to deal with the return of those who consider themselves to be its rightful rulers, the ancient enemy. Of course, both Lavalur and Azamet consider Alibi Jones to be their enemy. We'll catch back up with Alibi Jones on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Before I finish, a little word about audio editing, or re-editing. I don't know if you're aware, but each of these chapters of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her that you're hearing on this podcast, this run, are being newly re-edited before they play. I'm kind of finding that the way I presented them initially to be, I don't know, it's sort of flawed. There's too many pauses. I think even in the second Alibi Jones audiobook, I was overcompensating for having removed too many pauses in Vatican Assassin in its first run. Now, with the Vatican Assassin books, I slowed down, reread some, and added pauses back into some of those audio chapters. They sound better now.
It's funny because my earliest fans liked my work, but they were like, slow down. So, yeah, I think maybe I did slow down too much as I was doing these first Alibi Jones books. But I do really like the way these new re-edits are sounding. And I hope you do, too. That chapter there lost about 2 minutes and 20 seconds, I believe. Like 1840 to 1620, something like that. Just amazing how much I had in there. I was like, a lot of air. Remember, book news, Good Samaritan, Unto Dust, number 2 of 2, and the combined 2-in-1 graphic novel are both coming out this coming Wednesday, Ash Wednesday. Good Samaritan, Unto Dust, Ash Wednesday. It's perfect. I want to thank Comixology, Drive Through Comics, and Indie Planet for being so cool and cooperative for helping me get the book out simultaneously on this day, on that date. You'll be able to get it digitally at Comixology and Drive Through Comics, digitally at Indie Planet, but also there, print on demand. That's where you can get it in print. And they still have issue 1 from Earthbound. So you can get 1 and 2, or you can just get the combined 2-in-1. You can do it for that, you can get that. Yeah, I don't know, I just had What Better Choice from Fatboy Slim pop into my head for no good reason. So I should probably wrap it up here. That is it for this episode. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.